Hello, coffee makers, not coffee takers. He is Dr. Joseph J. Burt Miller, and I am the master of Cerber Farms, Alfredso B. Nash Jr. We are the hosts of the Cyber Coffee Hour. We are two experts from Mount Vernon, New York, sharing with you our experiences in this field and also the experience of others so we can ultimately learn, elevate, and realize that we belong in this space. The views, opinions, and thoughts of Cyber Coffee Hour are not those of our employers, personal, or professional relationships. For today's show, we're going to discuss the major data breach affecting members of the Department of Defense, DOD. How are you doing today, Joseph?
I'm doing great, man. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Good, man. So far, so good.
So I see we got a, you know, I like this. I like the solo shows. You know, I love our guests. It's nothing against that. I believe we want more. But, you know, I do appreciate, you know, the... When it's just us at times. So, you
Same,
know, so
brother.
It's good.
Same.
But no, man, I guess just doing a quick catch up because, you know, we both get busy. But for myself, I went to go see, you already know I had to go see Bob Marley, One Love.
Nice. How was that?
Yeah, it was good, man. It was good, man. Yeah, my wife and I, we went to go see it Saturday. Went to go see Saturday night. It was really good. I thought so. The actor who played Bob Marley, Kingsley Benadire, he did really well. And not to give out any, you know, anything from the movie, but all right, I'll put it like this: like movies I've seen where Jamaicans are being portrayed in a movie. And they're not using actual Jamaicans. You could tell how cringeworthy the accent is. But no, it really showed Kingsley. He did a lot of work because I even read up on it. He worked with Ziggy Marley, one of Bob Marley's sons. He worked on the accent, you know, getting himself familiar with patois. And no, I could tell like he really, you know, put a lot of effort into it. And another thing too, as you're watching the movie, which I thought was pretty surreal, was that, like, and I give a lot of props to the cinematography of the movie because they caught him at different, like, certain angles of him. It really looked like Bob Marley. It felt weird because it felt like I was actually getting a view into Bob Marley's life, like, as he, you know, as if he was still alive and actually seeing him. So...
Also, Kingsley favors him aesthetically on film, too, so they really... made him
nice. His movements, the way he performed in like during his live performances, because like at the end of the movie that they'll show clips of Bob Marley from his, you know, from his actual performances, and they show some of the reenactments that what Kingsley did during the movie, and then they show that again at the end and what he was doing at certain performances. So I was like, man, he really did a lot of work in capturing that. But no, it was good. I really enjoyed it. You're getting, and of course, I mean, people gonna have maybe their opinion on it because, you know, maybe there's certain things that it didn't capture or the things they didn't talk about. But I think the one thing I do have to keep in mind is that there is capturing a snapshot of his life, not his whole life. You know what I'm saying? It's focusing on one aspect of his life. So, you know, you can't, because if you're trying to throw everything in, it's going to be like a 5-hour movie. You know what I'm saying? So it's, yeah, I think I just appreciate it for what it is. I thought it was a great tribute to him. And, you know, and I think it's first of its kind. I mean, just to see something like that, to see Jamaica being represented on a big screen. And I thought it was very well done. Like I said, the Marley family was involved in very closely from the beginning. Like I said, Ziggy Marley, specifically, was very involved with the production from start to finish. So, and I'm sure, you know, if he felt any sort of way that wasn't being represented of his father, he's like,
right.
Yeah, he's like, no, we can't do this. So,
right.
So that gave me reassurance that, you know, it's going to be a good film. So, no, I really enjoyed it, man. I thought it was good.
Where was it showing and how did you get tickets for it?
Oh, so we went to the Alamo Draft House in DC.
Okay.
Not too far, but it was not bad. It's one of those theaters where you you know, if you make any noise or whatever, they kick you out. Which I think is good. They do have strict rules. It's not one of those things where you could bring like a, you know, young kids in there and they're crying and you're like, nah, man, you gotta go. So I think just knowing that going in, like this is not a theater for that. Of course, you can go to any other theater, but this type of theater is catered for those like people who do want to appreciate and consume the movie and not have distractions or people's phones going off, this and that. So nice. They do have those strict rules. But no, like I said, I could appreciate that. I thought it was good because I go to the movie to watch the movie and not hear, you know, everyone else talking or whatever. But But that's where we went. Usually we go to IPIC theaters. But
was that IPIC?
Yeah, IPIC, IPIC. Okay. Went to a couple of times in New York, then a couple of times here in Maryland. So they have like the, you know, the reclining seats. They have like the food they bring to you and stuff like that. no, I mean, it's a whole experience. It was good. But what about you, man? Like, what you got going on?
So a little bit of everything right now. So first, I found a new coffee brew. It's called Black Acres. It's out of Baltimore City. I found it Googling around, looking for Black-owned coffee shops. And I actually found it in a Trader Joe's. I couldn't find it anywhere else. So I actually went to Trader Joe's, picked up a little 2-pound bag. And it's actually pretty good. It's pretty good, man. Yeah. So I'm working on that, understanding, finding them, and probably going to go visit them. You know, I'm not too far from them, so I'll go visit them downtown. Black Acres out of Baltimore City is pretty good. Comparing them to something called Atwater's before, and I didn't really like the Sumatra taste of Atwater's, so I switched to them, and it's pretty good. So that's just my thing. I did that last weekend. Coming into this weekend, I finally got them. Also, I'm working, so I'm using that to fuel me on my interest in landscape design. So on the side of the desk, I'm doing landscape design and sustainable horticulture as a study. I got, you know, clothes on my new house and couldn't do anything in the backyard. So I went back to school. All right. I went back to school to figure out how to basically become a master gardener initially. But then exploring that, they told me I needed 20 accredited hours in sustainable horticulture. And I was like, what is that? You know, what are you talking about? Yeah. I don't know what that is. And so
I was going to say, man, like, if you can explain for our listeners, what is horticulture? Because I never.
Oh, man, that's going to probably lead into another episode. But yeah, I'll definitely touch on it. So the world we know today, it mm-hmm. has great infrastructure, you know, the cities. Okay. You know, the landscape, as they call it, in cyber too. Cyber, we have gray, you know, infrastructure, gray collar, gray hat, whatever. Well, in the environmental sciences, the landscape that's gray is considered cities. And inside the cities, there's stormwater runoff, different pollutants that affect the green landscape. Everything that we eat, grow, green thumbing it, turning this black thumb green is growing in the environment. So sustainable horticulture is to preserve the actual natural environment and remove pollutants, non-natives, invasive species, pests and plants included, and conserve the environment. Here in Maryland and 6 other states, Delaware, New York, Virginia, and Pennsylvania, I'm glad I remember that, the Chesapeake Bay is the target for conservation. So sustainable horticulture teaches you how to preserve that natural landscape and remove the things from the gray landscape that influence it and can potentially shrink it, right? Remove the things that we love to eat and watch grow, right? Yeah. So horticulture focuses more on the plant life and the ecosystems of the green space, of the green environment. Opposed to agriculture, which is just farming, not to take away from it, but it's mostly the farming we know, you know, the big farms, the tilling and growing of corns and things, big production monocrops, where horticulture is the diversity of the environment. So I hope I explained that right. I know people are going to kill me because if they know that I'm listening, I should have did a better job. But in doing that, I'm catching up on the landscape design part of it now, how to design our landscapes to be more sustainable, to be more friendly. And on the side here, I'm actually growing pots and plugs to do that in my house. Different things that are edible, native plants, bulbs, things like that. So I'm combining the gray and the green as we speak. and that's what I plan to do after this recording, is pick that back up and get stuff started. Right now it's the winter, it's cold hardy now. The stuff I start now will be flourishing once the spring and summer come around. Hopefully, fingers crossed.
No, I think that's very impressive, honestly, man, because even when I look, especially like my parents, especially my father, like he grows up like a whole garden, man. Like he grows up like a whole forest in like no time. And I'm struggling to keep my house plants alive. So,
it had me shook. I was shook, man. Look, there's nothing like, I'm sure I'll talk about it more, but there's nothing like going, first of all, we all know, we'll be real. The experience of closing on a house, right, is nothing like it. And the second experience is watching my daughter, my oldest, say, "Hey, Dad, we need to grow blueberries." And then her, she's the main experience. So shout out to my daughter, right? The second thing she goes is, "Dad, do you know what a fairy garden is?" "No, how do you know what that is?"
All right.
And she saw all the landscape in the back. She likes the backyard. And it's the best experience is have your kids teach you something. So she taught me. She's the influence for me going to know what these gardens are and what they do. Because we were fortunate to purchase our house from a former nursery worker. So they picked up they picked up different plants in the back, holly trees that I didn't know about, azaleas I didn't know about. Watch, like you said, I felt guilty watching this nice stuff die and not know what to do about it. So so a lot of it's native, thank God. And then we're gonna try to keep it alive, you know, try to keep it alive in our backyard.
That's good. That's good, man.
But much like you said, I was shook. I'm still kind of like overwhelmed.
Yeah, so looking down the calendar, man, see, birthday's coming up, man. You know?
February 28th, man, you know.
You got any plans? How you feel?
I'm feeling old, man, I'll be real. I'll be kind of corny, like, I'll be 38 years young, you know what I'm saying? So I'm feeling it. I'm actually feeling like some reflection on my life. I've been at this game about 18 years of that. I've been in IT and trying to convert over to cyber, and I have my daughter, my family come along. So I've been feeling the reflection now, like watching back and saying, "Man, you know, I remember when I was 18, I said 20 years would be far enough away, and here it is, boom, gone."
Yeah.
As far as plans, I keep it real boring. I'm trying to go down to DC Wharf. There's a couple spots down there I want to check out. Mainly, the theme is to be seafood related. And then check out some s'mores down there. And then from that, I hope to piggyback into the weekend going out to check out, I think it's called Sugarloaf Mountain. Now, again, my family doesn't like when I hop around like that. So first, I'm going to see what they have planned. And then if it's kind of slow, we'll jump out and hit the road. I like to go to like state parks, mountain reserves, wineries too. You know, so,
yeah.
If it's usually paired up with, hey, if it's a nice trail or a winery there, I'm going to go do it, you know.
Right. That's good.
But yeah, I'm feeling the age now, like feeling like, that's about right. That's, you know, closer to 40 kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, man. Definitely as you get older, I think, you know, for the most part, you know, priorities do change. Like as you mentioned, the way you think may change. Just the whole mindset is going to be different. And of course, needless to say, there's that physical aspect, the physical changes where you may not be able to bounce back as we did when we were younger. So it may take a little longer to recover or, you know. So, a lot of changes, but it's good, man. It's good, you know, another year around the sun. Also, too, you know, today, as we're recording this, so today's my wife's birthday.
Yes, double down on the birthdays of February.
Right. Right. Yeah, so hence why we're doing this in the morning, because I got some work to do after this. So, but that's good, man. I think that's great. You know, like I said, happy early birthday to you. You know, another year health, good health and strength, man. That's great.
Yeah, I hope to get closer to eating what better too, you know.
I think that's also part of that reflection too. Like, you know, you kind of look at it like, yo, I can't, you know, do these certain things anymore, or, you know. But again, the main thing is still here with us amongst the living. Because like I said, it's definitely a blessing, man, because can't take, you know, any of this for granted. So.
Yeah.
Again, early happy birthday for you, and obviously that should make me the first one to wish you happy birthday, because I'm doing this now on the pod. Right.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it.
All right. All right. So let's get into it. So we have the article that we're gonna discuss today. It's titled DOD notifying more than 26,000 people who may be impacted by a year old data breach. Mm-hmm. Author is Brandy Vincent from Defense Scoop, and this is dated 13 February 2024. So I'll read a quick excerpt from the article. So the Pentagon is in the process of alerting more than 26,000 current and former employees, job applicants, and partners that their sensitive personal information may have been exposed online in a data breach incident that was first detected in early 2023. Just from my analysis, you know, as I looked over this article, seeing that so there was a notice that came from, or sent out, I should say, from DIA, and that's the Defense Intelligence Agency. Yes, over, like I said, 20,600 affected members received the following documentation, and I quote, "So this letter is to notify you of a data breach incident that may have resulted in a breach of your personally identifiable information, or PII, from February 3rd, 2023 through February 20th, 2023. Numerous email messages were inadvertently exposed to the internet by a DOD a service provider." Again, those not aware, DOD, that's Department of Defense. Unfortunately, some of these email messages contain PII associated with individuals employed by or supporting the DOD, or individuals seeking employment with the DOD. While there is no evidence to suggest that your PII was misused, the department is notifying those individuals whose PII may have been breached as a result of this unfortunate situation, end quote. Alfredo, wow. I know you know shaking your head and, you know, stressed out, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but let me take a minute, man. This coffee's good.
Oh my gosh.
It's Black Acres, it's out of Baltimore City. I'll be real, man. So I'm a little agitated. And the article agitates me in a sense, but also when I'm in the reflection that I'm doing, 5 years ago, I didn't know what the DIA was. Mm. True story, right? 5 years ago, I was in this university called Unico University, and it took one, Professor David Smith, shout out to you, Professor David Smith, if you see this, to inform me about this agency and the capabilities that it had. And this was a part of a class. This was part of a threat intel class in their curriculum, probably biggest curriculum I've taken in my career, right? And then in that, I would have never thought just 5 years later they would have had a breach of this magnitude. Now, this is not knocking them, right? Because if you go back 10 years ago, I just learned what the OWASP top 10 was, top 20 now, password reuse and expiry accounts. So in that short span, we have a pretty big agency, again, witnessing. Now, we all know about OPM. It's not really fresh for our listeners. There was another type of situation similar where it was 4 million records of personnel, but that was in, I believe, I just checked my research and my research, the .gov space. Now we're starting to see this agency, a pretty, I'll say, prestigious organization, the .mil space, have 26,000, only 5 years after I learned who they were. And it's I'm biting my tongue because now you're right. I gotta watch what I say too, because I've known this organization. I've come to study in the 5 years. I'm concerned about the personnel's information being exposed.
Yeah. Right?
So and we don't know, we'll get into a little later, but we don't know how we exposed or the scale of which, what they were doing, right? This could be their addresses, socials, I see. Whatever that information should be very sensitive with the people working there. And I'm a little agitated that something that seems simple in a data breach on paper could have been a potential, could potentially been avoided in security practice. You know what I'm saying? Like a cybersecurity practice, it could be a number of controls that are in place to prevent this information, a little bit of isolation of this information being leaked. So I want to dive into that and just express my frustration, because I kind of hold them in high regard. You know, I hold the Defense Intelligence Agency in high regard because I didn't know who they were 5 years ago. And then when I found out, I kind of looked at them a little differently. You know, I kind of expected them to have better data protection practices.
Yeah, this you know, when we're talking about the full scale of like what was affected, when we said about the PII, yeah, we're talking about addresses, social security numbers, you know, credit card details, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. For me, my first thoughts, you know, when it said it's affecting the DOD, I'm initially thinking it's affecting more than one agency, because DOD encapsulates, it's not just any single, like I said, entity. And also, given that they're not releasing like specifically who the agency or agencies are, or departments or whoever, you know, I don't know. They haven't confirmed that, but my first thing, I guess, thoughts were that this is affecting multiple, you know, agencies or departments or whatever the case is.
So can you break that down even for me too? How would, so of the 26,000, you're saying they would be different agencies inside of DOD, right?
Mm-hmm.
Potentially. Okay. I see what you're saying.
Right.
So that population of 26,000 could be spread out across the department.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I highly doubt that it would just be one. You know, I even think it could also involve, potentially military members as well.
Dang.
You know, like I say, if you're talking about DOD, you do have to factor that in. But again, we don't know. This hasn't been confirmed. They're not, like I said, they're not releasing who specifically was affected. But again, those are my first thoughts. And I think we said that is when I was reading the quote, it was reading, I think it was affecting those who were even seeking employment. So
trying to get into the agency, right.
You're not even fully with the, you know, whichever agency, you know, a potential employee was applying for, you're not even in yet. Because of course, initially when you talk about that, yes, when you're trying to apply, you know, for any of these agencies, there is some information you do have to submit to give to, when we're talking about getting the background check process started, things of that nature, biometric records, social security numbers, of course, all those things. You do give up a lot of information before you even start working, you know.
Let's back up then, because I made a mistake then, and I'll say that in the recording, right? The notice was sent out from DIA, but we don't know if it was I see what you're saying now. We don't know if it was the DIA or other potential agencies. The DIA looks like they were the notifying agency, but it's not to say that the breach occurred with them.
Right. It was with DOD, but yeah, the DIA, the DIA is the one who, at least for this article, was, the notice came from DIA, but affecting DOD members. So again, right. It could span,
man,
you know, like I said, from military to all the different DOD agencies. So I don't know, like, you know, it could be any number of them. It could be maybe just one or two, or, you know, four or five. I don't know. But that is a high number. Like I said, so yeah, current, former employees, you know, those, you know, job applicants, partners, it's very far
reaching. Service providers too, right? Like,
right,
you said,
yeah,
people, right? You know, so that's
people, right? So I mean, you know, I think it's very concerning, because it's could look at this like, what if you were someone who was supporting maybe the DOD, and just throw out an example, maybe you're just there to, you know, what, you know, do some routine maintenance, or like, you know, mopping the floor, or, you know, it could be any level, because even with that, and it's not a knock for those who are doing that type of work, because even to do that in these facilities, you still need a clearance, you know, to even do that, you know.
See, that's so schooling to me get even the door. Yeah, you're schooling me on that too. I didn't.
So yeah, so it could be very far reaching, and it could be those who are not even involved with, you know, any or handling any, you know, classified information or anything like that. Mm-hmm. You could be something very, very far separate from that, you know, far removed from that. But But given the environment that you work in, you do have to go through similar process as someone who is handling classified information.
Okay. So let's bust that open a little bit, right? There's mm-hmm. no evidence of misuse, and affected individuals are encouraged to sign up for government-provided identity theft protection services. The breach was addressed by removing the affected server from public access on February 20th of 2023. So tomorrow, as at the time of this recording, that'll be an official year, right? So we're seeing the lens of, even though, you know, it's a year went by, right? I get that. But do we know if that public server is, you know, decommissioned or, you know, you know, like, you're going to say, like, in a year's time now, we've come to full circle. Is that server being shut down, decommissioned, and are the access controls being updated?
Well, and that, yeah, no, I think that's a great point because, I mean, still, at least according to this article, you know, there's no confirmation of that. I mean, that's the plan, but
yeah, that's the mitigation. Know, like,
it was, but has it been done, or if it has already been done already, we don't know for sure. It seems almost kind of follow the same kind of script where, you know, if you look at like private entities where, you know, there's a data breach and they say, hey, we'll give you a year of monitoring and, you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We'll try to make it better while we potentially remediate the situation.
Well, yeah, but then by that point, it's already too late because your info is already out there. It's already being probably circulated, recirculated, you know, in different, you know, different channels. You do have to, and another thing too that I think about too is, you know, depending on who is affecting, even from like a service member aspect of it, you know, those who, you know, military members that maybe, you know, maybe on certain missions, and what if their information was compromised, you know, that's putting them in danger for certain missions that they're on and things of that, you know.
So what makes that a connecting point? Because it's the DOD, right? You don't know where this PII resides within the whole department at this point. So of the 26,000, you could say those folks could be on mission somewhere?
I mean, it's. I don't think you could rule it out.
Damn, son. That's crazy.
Yeah. Right. I mean, right. It's... And I think that's probably also, too, as to why they're not... They don't want to confirm or just say who exactly was affected, and then, you know, I think that as part of that mitigation, they do want to try to contain it. They do get out enough information to say yes, there was a breach, and just to let you know. But I don't think they want to dig. I don't think they want to give too much info either, where it could probably do more damage than good, at least in my opinion.
No, I dig it. It's tracking with me too now. So if I think back to the OPM hack, and I'm not going to keep pouring salt on the wound, but would you say, so that was .gov, right? Would you say this is more impactful on the .mil side with the mission scope? Because I don't, again, literally, I don't understand the delineation between the two. So if you're saying .mil, would you say with the number of folks that are compromised here in this breach, is the criticality higher than the OPM hack, or is it about the same?
I think it'd be probably about the same, maybe a little more, because it's from my view, it's potentially affecting not just one, I guess, pool of members. Got you it. Know, so it could be, like I said, it could be military, it could be, you know, government civilian, it could be, you know, a mix of those. And also too, we even said those who support a lot of these DOD agencies, so, you know, contractors, you know, things of that nature. So I think it could be potentially have a higher criticality with this type of hack, and maybe that number is low. Well, what if it's higher?
Yeah, so, you know, this is the part that comes out of the deconfliction of certain stuff. We don't know if it's only 26,000, and we still don't know. I mean, so we could probably do a follow-up episode, but we still don't know what was the means to expose this data, right? You know, I mean, if you could say it's an Active Directory server, I'm checking it now, actually, to be real with you. If it was an Active Directory server or one of these, because I'm looking at another article and another potential vector, or if it was credentials that was exposed, right? So, you know, we don't know with that scope what this particular public server facing server was doing. And then we don't know how much personnel is on this one server, or if it's a fleet of servers. Those of us who know who's deployed them or who's backed up this information, it could be more than one server affected, right? But yeah, that's worth diving a little deeper into.
And I think another thing too is, you know, we always talk about, you know, following even just a very basic cybersecurity practices. So I do wonder if this was a result of, you know, maybe I don't know if there was any laziness involved as far as when it comes to cybersecurity practices.
That sticks a chord a little bit, right? I don't want to think anybody, we say no amateurs, right? There's no amateurs on this side of the fence, right? Password reuse policy has been out there for a minute. It's been out there for, and I'm going to just speak pretty relaxed here, right? Also, the sessions, right? The long-lived passwords has been out, a finding for God knows how long, right? And then expiring those. So people who have left the organization, got promoted, might have moved to a different, part of the company even, internally, might have needed their password audited, right? So now I'm saying might because you're right. It is about being diligent and knowing, hey, I can't reuse this password. Or, hey, I got to expire this person's, and we still don't know, right? Hey, I might have to expire this compromise. Now, I'm still tracking on trying to figure out what caused this particular breach, and there's still verdicts out on it. But like you said, the bar is pretty low to reset people's passwords. That's 10-year span. Then after that, policing is enforced and known everywhere. You kill the sessions that people that have left the organizations. Now, some people cut hairs on that too. Well, we don't have people to do that. There's budgeting concerns, there's staffing concerns, but somebody has to be there to understand that's the order of operations, right? And I don't think, at least I hope, that it's not a laziness or amateur thing, but just a lack of knowledge to that's the order, you know, things are supposed to take place. You know, I really hope it's not laziness.
But a lot of those things still happen to this day. I mean, if you talk about like privilege creep or like, you know, kind of mentioning the scenario, like paint a scenario where, you know, someone who may just got promoted within a company or agency. So maybe they didn't leave, but they're moving up and the access that they had for their previous role, they may still keep it, even though there's really no need for that individual to maintain that access. So you do have that privilege creep, you know, as they move on to, like I said, to another role or higher role or whatever it is, but their previous access wasn't being denied or revoked or whatever the case is. And you may have scenarios where people who do leave, completely leave, you know, an organization, and for whatever reason, the company organization does not terminate or properly terminate that, you know, the person who left their access, that profile, or, you know, again, for whatever reason it is.
Inside of a year. That's a concern. That's a valid concern too.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I do understand, like, for a certain period of time where you don't necessarily delete the account, but you deactivate it. You know, it could have maybe, depending on what that individual did, it could be some information that's still useful, like for the org, after that person left. But it shouldn't be active. It should not be in a state where someone can still gain access to it. Right. Especially if that person did have like admin credentials or anything like that, you definitely want to make sure that shut down and those privileges are removed. Because then now you're talking about someone could gain if someone was to gain access, illegal access to that account, to a dormant account, but it still has admin access to it. You know, they can utilize that account and work their way through a company's network. So it just made me think, you know, hopefully, like I said, those when we talk about cybersecurity practices, even at the lowest level, I hope that it wasn't a case of that. But we see it time and time again where we see like these real big breaches, and it was because a company didn't change their default password.
Right. So we know that's the how, right? We've known over the last decade or so, or plus more. I mean, plus five on that too, because I, like you said, I'm getting older, right? But we don't know the why. The why, if we've seen time and time again, different breaches, different tactics, techniques, procedures, that's our favorite buzzword nowadays, right? Mm-hmm. And we know the landscape, particularly threat landscape, right? We've talked about that before, right? We know that these particular systems, agencies, infrastructures targeted, where is the due diligence to police those, like basically assess them inside of the year? Because I know where you're going to, right? Inside of a year, you know, you might have an audit, you know, some kind of pen test, another audit, you know what I mean? A scan, mm-hmm. right? Where is that due diligence in not so much as the government, because even in the private sector, we know that costs, you know, money, time, effort, skill up, level up. Where is that order of operations going to catch on inside of 10 years?
And no, I think you kind of answered it right there, because all those things you just mentioned, yeah, it's going to require resources. It's going to require money. Like, you know, man, woman power to get those things done. If you're talking about, you know, if you want to employ like a third party, you know, auditor to make those assessments, like I said, that's money. So maybe a company may look at those things and be like, you know, try to save some money on this.
Or,
you know, it could be like a lesser company. So not even to talk about, you know, government, but like, you know, a smaller, let's say like a smaller, you know, private owned company, try and get started.
You mean like things, a startup?
Yeah.
Yeah, startup, right. They got to make a reason to afford that.
Yeah. So, I mean, so those things, they may not be able to, yeah, as you mentioned, they may not be able to even afford to have those. Mm-hmm. So maybe some of those things are being overlooked because of that, because simply they just can't. It's not in the budget, but also too, with that said, that will make them vulnerable to different attacks.
Right. And so in both of our experience, I have to admit too, I just came online with understanding these tactics and techniques and procedures. Now, again, it's about a 5-year run now. And that's what made me adjust my career to focus, particularly one of my employers gave me the opportunity to remediate these findings, right? Ahead of time, allegedly, right? We assess ourselves, risk score it like we've seen out there in industry, and then try to get ahead of redesigning that particular environment to fix the issue. Now, not going back and digging that up, but I've seen it in industry, LinkedIn, YouTube, various outlets, even the training platforms, TryHackMe. They're going through educating folks to these different techniques and tactics and procedures. Yeah. Is there a disconnect between both sides of us? And I'm saying it from the public side and the private side. Are we just now coming online to understanding these particular tactics and how they can be leveraged?
I think the way it's being, you know, creating that awareness, we're talking about, having those, you know, that cybersecurity awareness of those different methods. I think we are getting better in that sense, because it's being commercialized. I remember even seeing a commercial where it was a commercial kind of catered towards the elderly, because it was around, of course, you know, tax season, and it was kind of centered around, you know, like phishing attacks where someone would try to call or vision, I'd say, you know, someone try to call and say, hey, we're from IRS and, you know, pay this money or whatever, and they were, you know, they were exposing or, you know, trying to take advantage of those who just didn't know any better. And like I said, you know, those of a older age, they were giving the money up because either, like I said, they didn't know any better. They felt like, oh man, I don't want to get in trouble. Let me pay this X amount of money and do it. So I do see the messaging is getting better because they're talking about those different scenarios. Hopefully is to educate and inform the public on those different things that where, you know, bad actors will try to expose people and try to take advantage of them.
So in this particular article, one comes to mind with the potential of exposed credentials. There's something that's behind the scenes called lateral movement.
Right.
Is that lateral movement through a particular agency or because it's not just agencies. We're not going to pick on just the agencies, right? Private sector, do they don't know where that lateral movement may or may not exist in their organization, it sounds like, right? Because to me, if it's a year, right, how long the server's been deployed is the same conversation. And then the remediation is an immediate action, not a wait action, right? It's not something that, you know what I mean? I'm not trying to be funny, but like, if I was to become a pen tester today and I was to go get the job today, I would have to know that. So why are the companies not, you know what I mean? Why are the companies not aware of hiring people like me or hiring somebody that could find this particular exposed credential and how to remediate it? It seems like there's a disconnect between the two. Like we talked about the workforce shortages in other episodes, and then we talked about the criticality of some of these sectors. Well, putting those two together, now that's the job description, right? That kind of seems like that's what I would need to know before I enter your organization. But does the organization know that because they don't have that particular person's staff? You know what I'm trying to say?
I mean, so you're asking if you're saying like, I guess you're putting like the ignorance on an organization to know or not.
Yeah,
know.
They need to know these particular exposed credentials exist. Now, if they're saying to me, I have to hire somebody.
But you're assuming that they don't know.
Yeah, I'm assuming. I mean, they didn't know in this particular case.
Well, that's bad on them.
I was hoping I wasn't reaching, but yeah, it would be bad. That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking it would be bad.
Because I mean, you know, an organization with the resources available to them, I think that's pretty bad. I mean, when we talk about, you know, as you mentioned, like having pen tests, those to come in and make those checks, so hopefully to find those things out before it does, you know, really get exposed in a real world environment. No, again, like, you know, if there are like accounts that are exposed, or any credentials that shouldn't be, or access for accounts that needs to be revoked at a certain period of time, and they're not being enforced, that's something you do have to look at as an organization. You probably have to look within the leadership chain as well. I think that's something probably we'll see maybe in the coming weeks, months, and you know where the case is. Maybe, you know, there was a slippage with leadership. There wasn't, you know, certain things, checks weren't being made, you know, whether a certain employee or employees weren't doing their job, which can cause something like this.
I can't get with, that's the part I think that's so let's, I hope we get some comments on what I'm about to say next, right? Mm-hmm. They weren't doing the job because it wasn't staffed. You get what I'm saying? Like what if an assessor wasn't staffed to find these things? Like a pen tester. Let's just pick mm-hmm. the first person in the totem pole. We're not going to go higher, right? Just say entry-level pen tester, right? What if that position was open for a year? Multiple positions. And then so now that cascades to what you're saying, the leadership to hire that person would not, I'm just being, you know, trying to be, how do you say, on the positive side. I'm trying to have some positive intent, right? Somebody's leadership knows that that role exists and they should be recruiting for it inside of a year. So now to your point, did the leadership not know because that position may or might not been open?
And we I get what you're saying. Well, I think that's different then. If you don't have required roles to do that job, that post to find out those things, then yeah, that in itself creates a vulnerability because now.
Got it. That's what. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Because
that's what I'm trying to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. So if a person that's, you know, on a team that, you know, or in, you know, group of individuals, you know, it could be more than, I don't want to put it just pinning on one person, but it could be one or a couple of people that post to carry out those different tasks to, which to me, I feel is critical, could be, you know, critical for organization, yeah. For their security, for their cybersecurity. And if those roles are not being filled or you have someone that's on a team that's new, but they just, they're new, maybe they don't have that experience yet to even know how to do those tasks yet. It does create a vulnerability within the organization.
I dig it.
But again, what we're doing right now is just really all speculation.
So how do folks get notified of this event once it, I guess since it's still in the air, right? How are they notifying the potential victims of this breach?
Well, they know exactly who. So, okay. I'm sure that they're sending out, probably mailing out notices. I mean, given from that quote, that was the exact verbiage that they used. So, either they did that by email or letters or, just to let them know, to inform them, those who were affected. I'm sure they'll reach out to them. Or they may get it on their, on their work site email, depending on, I believe, they are making, I'm sure they made attempts to make sure that those who affected are notified and informed,
right,
that they were affected so they could take the, appropriate measures.
Right. Well, yeah, man, I like these episodes now. Just with us, we got to keep these rolling. We got to keep a couple more of these rolling. And we should target guests towards these particular topics as well. I know we did that. We were doing that in the beginning, but the follow-on should probably get a guest, from one of these orgs or something like that. But yeah, this has my attention, man. I was kind of anxious of reading it, and now I understand a little better the remediation plans, right? The intended scope, and we're still figuring that out, right? How many people were affected is a big one.
Yeah, like I said, this is something I feel is going to continue. We'll learn more as time goes on. So, but I do understand why, they're not saying too much, because I believe it could cause more damage, depending on, who is being affected and, things of that nature. They said enough to acknowledge that there is a breach and to make sure those affected aren't informed or properly informed. But I think I wouldn't be surprised that we don't get to know who exactly. I think that'll be something more on a, I think, classified basis, not for public consumption. I think makes sense.
And there's a partnership to keep the lid on it. I see the difference now. So in the private sector, that don't really happen, right? It's react, proact, proactive. But now I can see, like you said earlier, if somebody's on support of whatever activity, it doesn't just have to be mission. It could just be like somebody filing stuff away, right? Or a janitor, a concierge, right? You don't want that information to this particular individual out there. So that's, I respect that too.
Right.
I respect that.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
Yeah, man.
We'll see how this plays out as, like I said, as the weeks, probably months goes on. And I feel we'll get updates as, as we go on. But, and mind you, don't be surprised if we see that number go up. The fallout.
I'm trying to let's put a pin in it and see by my birthday if that number goes up. You know what I mean?
I hope not, man. But
me neither. I don't want to see that.
I wouldn't be surprised if we see, later reports that the number is more than what it is.
Boy.
So, but like I said, we'll see how it goes. But yeah. I thought that was a very interesting article. So before we close out, I guess any closing remarks, thoughts?
No, I'm actually gonna probably hit the coffee spot up. I'm probably gonna load up with some more coffee, man. For real, especially this week. Now looking at this, you're right. It's just brace for impact. It doesn't impact me or you directly, but it's something to keep an eye on. I'm gonna get some more coffee to be prepared for it,
And what was the name of that coffee place?
That's Black Acres Roastery. I just picked them up like yesterday. I just picked them up. I was looking for them for a little bit, and somebody actually recommended them to me. I found it in Trader Joe's. I'm gonna keep an eye out for it anywhere else in my immediate area. But it's a Black Acres Roastery.
Good stuff. All right. Well, that's a wrap. Thank you for tuning in to the Cyber Coffee Hour. If you enjoyed this episode, please like, share, and subscribe. Follow us on all of our platforms. You can find the Cyber Coffee Hour on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. That's a wrap. Have a good day, everyone.
Take care.
Catch you on the next one. Peace.